Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Zach Walls is our guest this hour. Zach is the young man from Iowa. He now lives in Iowa City, actually, who several years ago spoke before the Iowa legislature. He wrote in a piece in the Des Moines Register on April 6, 2009, as the son of a same-sex couple in Iowa, one of the first test tube babies of a lesbian mother nationwide, I was elated on Friday to learn that the Iowa Supreme Court had unanimously struck down the ban on same-sex marriage in Iowa. While a majority of people in Iowa remain opposed to same-sex marriage, and it could be prohibited again with an amendment to the Iowa Constitution, this decision in Iowa looks at the unique opportunity of setting a national common sense precedent. Zach has now written about his life, and an extraordinary life it has been, and he's quite an extraordinary young man. He is an Eagle Scout, and the book, I should tell you, is My Two Moms, Lessons of Love, Strength, and What It Makes a Family. He is a writer, speaker, civil rights advocate, entrepreneur, Green Bay Packers fan, I guess I should have said that first, and he is the founder of Iowa City Learns, which is an educational service dedicated to elevating academic achievement. He's currently the CFO of the Eastern Iowa Renewable Energy Coalition. His writing has appeared in the Daily Beast, the Des Moines Register, the Daily Iowan, and his video, which I'm sure you saw a couple of years ago. We have it on our Facebook page. If you have never seen this, it's worth your attention. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show. The video of his testimony before the Iowa House Judiciary Committee was the most watched political video of the year 2011. He has taken a little bit time off school because he's become a bit of a national sensation. And this past month, he was named as co-leader for the Outspoken Generation responsibility he shares with Ella Robinson, who's daughter of gay bishop Gene Robinson. It's an organization that gives children of gay parents a space to express themselves and to participate in advocacy work. We'll be welcoming phone calls for our guest, and our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Zach.
Hi, Kathleen.
Very nice to have you with us. There's so much Midwestern news here, too, because your mom, you were born in Wisconsin, weren't you?
That's right, Marshfield, Wisconsin.
Marshfield, Wisconsin, and quite a time this was. I was very fascinated to read about your mom's decision to have you, what she went through to have you, and what she went through to get your birth announcement in the newspaper.
Yeah, that's right.
So what did she go through?
Yeah, so I was born on July 15th, 1991, St. Joseph's Hospital in Marshfield, Wisconsin. And the next day, it was a Wednesday, she went home on that Thursday. It was a pretty straightforward birth. And Thursday morning, she opened up the newspaper, the Marshfield Daily Herald, looking for a birth announcement. No birth announcement. Mm-hmm. And she calls the newspaper, kind of, wondering what's going on. She thought, maybe they just, I was born at like 10 o'clock at night, so maybe they just missed the deadline, something like that. And it took her a little while to get an editor on the phone. And once she finally did, the editor informed her, Dr. Walls, it's our policy to not do illegitimate children. Needless to say, a new mother was not very pleased about this, and she politely informed him, well, that was fine. She understood their policy, and he would be hearing from her attorney. And he, reacted not very positively to that and called right back, actually, and said, Dr. Walls, I think we'd be willing to make an exception.
Right.
How do you spell the grandfather's name? And she, an exception? No. You need to change your policy. And Kathleen, let me tell you, she's always been a hard ass. So this was another example of her standing up for what was right and what she believed in. And the next day, not only was there a change to the policy, there was actually an editorial that ran in the newspaper, that read, "The world is changing, and our policies will change with it." So when my sister was born in 1994, a somewhat traumatic experience, and I write about that in the book, there was certainly a birth announcement in the paper the next morning.
Your mom's been a fighter for a long time. And we have to talk about what she went through to have you, because mm-hmm. this was not an easy process.
Not at all. So, yeah, it was, you know, you have to remember that when she started kind of examining this possibility, this was a very long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, Ronald Reagan was president of the United States. Ellen DeGeneres was not out. And Neil Patrick Harris was not awesome. It was a very different time for LGBT people in this country. And so, and add to that, not only was she at the time a single woman, she was, you know, a lesbian woman. She had a very lengthy journey ahead of her when she decided this was, you know, motherhood was what she wanted to do. So she had to, you know, first find a fertility clinic that would be willing to work with her, and then find a sperm bank that would be willing to work you know, with a single lesbian woman. And that took a process of around 2 years. And so it wasn't until 1990 that she actually got pregnant with me. And then I was born, as I mentioned, in 1991.
Mm-hmm. She has been very straightforward with you about all of the circumstances of your birth. You would have mm-hmm. truth sessions at the dinner table. You had family mm-hmm. dinner all the time. When did she tell you about the circumstances of your birth? And did you take it just sort of matter of fact, or did you have a lot of questions?
Yeah, to be honest, Kathleen, I can't remember a time when I didn't know. That is to say, I don't have a memory of a time in my life when I didn't understand who my family was or how I was conceived even. And the reason I think that's the case is that Terry from, and this is my biological mom, from, you know, even when I was just a little, you know, baby and I couldn't understand anything, obviously, she would tell me the story of my birth and the story of how I was conceived and how she was a lesbian woman and how some kids have two moms and some kids have two dads and some kids have a mom and a dad. And, you know, what's important isn't necessarily the components of your family so much as who your family actually is.
And at what point did she meet your other mom, Jackie?
Yeah, so they'd crossed paths in the very early 90s, but they didn't actually get to, you know, stop and know each other until about 1995. You know, their first kind of date that wasn't actually a date took place in Wausau, Wisconsin. There was a discovery zone at that point in Rothschild. And so that was, you know, where they kind of got to know each other while, you know, I ran around causing havoc in this indoor playground gymnasium area. And then in 1996, they had a commitment ceremony in the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Wausau, and were, for, you know, all practical purposes, religiously married, even though they couldn't fill out a marriage license.
And were other family members there? Your grandparents?
They certainly were. They certainly were. And, you know, this is actually something I mentioned in the book. You know, Terry's mom, Lois, her father, John, was deceased at the time. At first, was very hesitant about making it to the wedding, but then Terry's, two of Lois's friends, kind of Terry's adopted godparents, you know, insisted, Lois, you don't miss your daughter's wedding. And they took her down, or took her up, I guess, to Wausau from Iowa. And, you know, once she actually got there, it was a very happy moment for all of us.
Mm. And what was your role in the ceremony?
I was the ring bearer. So, you know, I got to walk down the aisle with the rings. And then they probably walked down before I did to the theme song of Star Trek Voyager, which was big at the time.
Star Trek Voyager. All right.
That's right.
Yeah. You write about encounters that you had, and I wonder how many of them there were. We are talking mm-hmm. about a time when people didn't talk about this very much in this society,
right.
And people are having a hard time talking about it now even. Mm-hmm. Did people say anything to you at school when they asked you what your parents did? Did you have to stumble with an answer?
Yeah. You know what? So when I was a young guy, still living in Wisconsin, we moved down to Iowa when it was the summer going into fourth grade. So K through three was in Marshfield, Wisconsin. And at that age, you know, people would find out that I had two moms, and their reaction would usually be something along the lines of, oh, you have two moms? Hey, I want two moms. You know, it was this kind of positive, you know, nothing to be afraid of. There wasn't any kind of negative reaction at all. Now, occasionally, there would be some kind of disturbance or what have you, but usually what would happen would be, and this, I guess I should say, you know, this only happened once that I'm aware of. You know, I had a friend, we'll call him John, and one day, you know, a phone call was made, and John stopped coming over to to play at my house. And it wasn't, you know, him reacting, oh my God, there's something wrong, you have lesbian parents. You know, it was one of his parents, his own parents, who stepped in and said, who made that call for him. And what I kind of failed to understand about the whole thing was, you know, we were still going to school together. You know, we were still, it wasn't like we were no longer seeing each other, but I guess his parents probably felt that there would be some kind of influence or what have you by my own parents.
Were you ever bullied?
Yeah. You know, when we moved down to Iowa, going into the fourth grade, you know, not only was I now the outsider, kind of the new kid, but I was the new kid who had two moms. Mm-hmm. And once you get to fourth, fifth, sixth grade, you're just old enough that some of those words from high school, you know, gay and queer and faggot, are starting to trickle down into permeate, you know, kind of the language and that. At that, you know, age group. And so I people started to understand that it wasn't just that you had two moms, it was that you had gay moms. And so that made me a target. And then you add to that the fact that my last name, Walls, rhymes with a moniker for testicles. Mm. It was, you know, it led to a kind of nasty nickname, which accompanied the fact that I didn't have a dad, and that was No Balls Walls, and I was, you know, kind of mocked and made fun of for a long time until I was willing to finally stand up and say, no, this isn't okay. And coincidentally, got taller than all of my other peers. You can't really tell in the video, but I'm 6'5", so I'm an awfully tall guy.
You are a tall guy. What did your mom say about all of this? How did they tell you to present yourself and to deal with the issue?
Mm-hmm. You know, when they finally figured out what was going on, and I didn't tell them at first because I didn't want them to be worried about, you know, the possibility that maybe their sexual orientation was causing me distress at school or anything like that. You know, so it took them a little while to get it out of me. But then once they did find out that I was being bullied and that it was because of who they were, they sat me down and we had kind of a conversation about it. But their primary concern wasn't in punishing anybody else. It wasn't in making sure that teachers were intervening on my behalf. It was in making sure that I was able to stand up for myself and defend myself without resorting to physical violence. And so they walked me through a number of techniques about ways that I could redirect attention back onto the bully, that I could, you know, kind of pull in other kids who were around and make it feel like they were, you know, part of the situation, so they weren't just bystanders or what have you. And in doing so, enabled me to stand up for myself, which is an incredibly important lesson to learn at that age.
Mm-hmm. It sure is. And you sure learned it, sir, didn't you? You really learned it. Did you have any friends who had similar family situations?
I knew a couple kids who had two moms, but we weren't particularly close. As I mentioned in the book, you know, it's certainly a part of who I am, and there's no doubt that it's certainly been a part of some of the friendships that I do have, but it's in no means definitional.
Right.
And so having two moms was never reason enough to be friends with somebody else, even though there was certainly maybe a level of empathy or something like that would have contributed to that relationship. But it was never such a huge part of my life that it was going to be reason enough to form a friendship.
That's very interesting what you said, that it's not, it wasn't definitional. And yet society believes that it is nothing but definitional, that
That's
it
right.
determines your sexuality, it determines whether or not you're a well-adjusted human being. Why has society made it such a definitional issue?
Yeah, it's silly, of course, because nobody looks at someone like Ellen DeGeneres and says, oh, look at her straight parents raising lesbian babies again.
Right.
You know, that's not the mindset. You know, people don't realize that, you know, straight parents have been the leading cause of gay people for, you know, ever. So if you wanted to have this argument, you know, and that was the line of reasoning you wanted to use, you're going to have to come to a number of other conclusions beyond, you know, that one. But the reason I think that society has this fixation on sexuality and sexual orientation specifically is the fact that there's this incredible amount of fear when it comes to sexual orientation. If you look at this part of human identity, there are an awful lot of people who think that it's very immoral, that it's a sin. And if it's a sin and if it's immoral, then it has to be a choice, because we wouldn't be created with this part of who we are if it is inherently immoral or sinful or what have you. And so people are fixated on this idea of it being a choice. And if it's a choice, why would you choose to be an identity that's going to condemn you to an eternity in hell? Mm-hmm. And to be quite frank, if I believed that was the case, I would be scared too, and I would be very fearful. But I think back on my own life and my own time growing up, and I can't remember a time ever in my life when the people I was attracted to was ever a choice. I think about, you know, the girlfriends I've had, and I never chose to be attracted to them. I simply was attracted to them. And I think that's the case for probably every single person on this planet. You know, if attraction was a choice, divorce wouldn't be approaching a 50% rate in this country because people could simply choose to be attracted to their spouses all the time. You know, Newt Gingrich would still be on wife number one and the whole thing. So when people make this argument that sexuality is a choice or that attraction, moreover, is a choice, I can't help but kind of scratch my head and wonder what they're talking about.
You know what I found remarkable about the book and about you, and you have found this remarkable as well, is that people may believe that there's something wrong here, that they're going to go to hell, that the whole family's going to go to hell, and then all of a sudden you appear. And you have really changed people's minds who had a completely different idea about what it's like to have two moms because they've met you. What you're doing is changing people's minds, which is quite an extraordinary thing, Zach, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, no, certainly. And it really is both an honor and a privilege to have that opportunity. And Kathleen, I think you got it right on the head. As soon as people actually sit down and get to know me and get to know my family, and not just me, but other guys who have two moms or other girls who have two moms or two dads and other same-sex couples that are parents or even not parents, what you do is you start building that bridge and you start learning more about what this couple is and what it means to have same-sex parents. And when you do that, you have this level of understanding. And in my mind, anyway, as I mentioned earlier, most of this fear surrounding this issue comes from a lack of understanding, you know, a fear of something foreign, of something different, of something that we don't understand or simply can't understand. And when you start building these relationships and getting to know people like my moms and me, then you have that level of understanding. And with that understanding comes, you know, the conquering of that fear.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Zach Walls is our guest this hour. His book is My Two Moms, Lessons of Love, Strength, and What Makes a Family. You'll recall that he spoke before the Iowa Judiciary Committee in January of 2011, last year, and it shows him speaking about his family, and all of a sudden, this just went viral. 18 million people have seen his very eloquent talk about his family, and it is the most watched political clip of last year. He has said, "The sexual orientation of my parents has had zero effect on the content of my character." So we'll be with you momentarily to take your calls. Did I give you everything else that you can do? You can call, you can write, or you can go to our Facebook page, where an interesting conversation could get started on all of this. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls for Zach. 800-486-8655 is our number. Facebook posting, Zach, from Ann, who says, "Your friends in Marshfield are listening and supporting you, Zach."
Thank you very much, Ann. It's always good to hear from you.
Oh, so you do know Ann. That's great.
I do indeed. I was good friends with her son, Andrew.
Great. And another one from Stephanie in La Crosse, who writes, "My partner and I have three children that I carried via artificial insemination with one anonymous donor. Our oldest son is in second grade. We have intentions of talking about how we've created our family, but have not yet. You answered that you always knew. Perhaps I'm overthinking things, but I worry about using clear language with them so the kids don't, in turn, use it at school and get teased."
Yeah, you know, so both of my moms work in medicine. Terry, my biological mom, is a physician. That's where she was working at the clinic in Marshfield when I was born. And Jackie's a nurse practitioner. Today, they both work at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Iowa City. And so the use of medical terminology was never foreign to them. And you know, I would strongly encourage Stephanie to use you know, those kind of medical terminology when talking to her own kids. You know, and if you know they get made fun of for it at school, I have to imagine that it seems unlikely that that would be the case. In my case anyway, you know, other kids, I mean, it wasn't something that I talked about at school, so it was kind of never an issue. But you know, I think being honest and being open about it is a very, very important.
Do you ever think, Zach, and you've met a lot of people in similar family circumstances now, considering the fact that this is still such a tumultuous and divisive issue in this country, the idea of gay marriage, the idea of two moms raising children, there are some people mm-hmm. who just don't like this idea at all. Are there a lot of people who have been children in families like yours who have had a hard time of it because of bullying, because of the societal perspective? I guess I'm asking is, are you exceptional?
So I think one of the themes that kind of underlies that question is something that you'll sometimes hear from a Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney of the world is this presumption. Well, you know, these kids are going to have to go through all of these challenges and all of these struggles because they're going to have same-sex parents. And that's not okay. They shouldn't be having kids because of that. And something I point out is that, you know, they said the same thing about the kids of interracial couples during the 60s and 70s. Oh, they're going to have to go through so much hardship growing up. Why should they have kids? And of course, today we look back on that with the same level of incredulity that I hope before too long we'll be able to look back on this same assertion today. And the fact of the matter is that, sure, I did have to go through some challenges because I had lesbian parents, but it's extraordinarily important, I think, for your listeners to understand that the reason I had to go through those challenges was not because of my moms. The reason I had to go through those challenges was because of the perception of my moms,
yes.
perceptions
yes.
being held by other people. What Rick yes. Santorum fails to understand when he gets up and says there is a problem with gay marriage is that when he says there is a problem with gay marriage, he creates a problem with gay marriage. And in fact, if you know, and it's not uncommon to hear folks on the other side say this is, you know, homosexuality is unhealthy or it's dangerous or it's going to lead to a lot of strife for these people. If you actually look at the data, you look at kids who are accepted by their peers and family when they come out versus kids who are rejected by their peers and family when they come out. The kids who are rejected compared to the kids who are accepted, and both kids are LGBT, it's the kids who are rejected who are 8 times more likely to wind up homeless. Mm. They are 4 times more likely to test HIV positive. They are 3 times more likely to abuse hard drugs and 3 times more likely to need to see therapists for the rest of their life. And so the difference here isn't LGBT status. It's acceptance and love by their friends and family.
Mm. Let's go to phone calls. Sunny in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hello?
Yes, Sunny. Hi.
Oh, hi. I was listening to your program, and you're talking about, you know, explaining to a child that he has two moms, and I thought, that's probably not as difficult for the children as it may be for some of the adults.
Because definitely.
I can remember I had second moms all the time I was growing up, and when my parents divorced and I was getting ready to go into the Air Force, and I hadn't been getting along well with my mom, so she said, you know, I have to sell the store and the house, and you know, there won't be room for you. And I said, that's okay, I'll call Mom Emerson. And, like, she nodded. It was like I'd called Mom Emerson Mom for years. And sometimes other people in my neighborhood, I'd say, well, you're my second mom.
That's a very interesting point. Many of us have two moms, Zach.
Yeah, Sonny, it is. It's a great example. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a friend, you know, whose parents divorced when she was fairly young. And so when I told her the title of my book, she said, two moms? Are you kidding? I've got two moms and two dads. You know, so this idea of, you know, having two parents or parental figures of the same gender isn't anything new in the American story. Not at all.
Thanks, honey, for the call. Tone in Washburn. Hi.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for writing the book. Hopefully it'll open a little eyes. I don't really have a question for you because, you know, you have the point of view that you have, which I appreciate. I'm not a person that is gay or lesbian, but I have a lot of people in my life that I love that are. And I just want to pose a question, I guess, to the people that throw up the biggest blockade, I guess, and that's the Christians. And I wonder about their Christianity because God, you know, forgave original sin by sending Christ, which Christianity is based on. And original sin encompasses all sin if they believe that's sin, for one thing. So they should be forgiving and loving toward homosexuality if they're homophobic to begin with. And even if they don't believe that's a sin, which is good, then they can just be loving and kind to people that are different than they are. But, you know, it doesn't seem to go with the dogma of Christianity to not be loving and kind.
Yeah, and it's a great point, and the reason that's so important is because I think a lot of times people do see religion, whether it's Christianity, Islam, Judaism, as one of the reasons for opposing same-sex marriage, LGBT rights generally. And what I like to make clear is that I don't think that's entirely accurate. I, in fact, have a number of very religious friends. You know, growing up in Iowa, it's a very religious state, and these are my friends who, once they get to know my moms, are not opposed to LGBT rights at all, or sometimes even before knowing my moms. And so what I think is important to illuminate, and this is actually something I mentioned in the book with my mom's adopted godparents, Sylvester and Darlene, who I mentioned earlier, dragged my grandma Lois to the wedding. You know, they were both very religious people. They're both Catholics, and they've been leaders in their church for a very long time. And so what's really at stake here isn't Christianity or religion generally. It's fear. And sometimes fear gets put into this cloak of religion. But once you actually move past this fear and this isolation, and you actually do start to build these bridges and have this empathy, you can move beyond that mindset and into a place of, and you got it exactly right, love and acceptance. And to just maybe drive that point home. My roommate, actually, and I mentioned this in the book, my roommate during my sophomore year of college was a very religious guy. He's, you know, very socially conservative, and he went to church every weekend with his equally reverent girlfriend. But he was of the opinion that even though in his mind homosexuality was a sin, if it wasn't harming anybody else, and in this case, even not harming even my moms at all, why would we want to pass a law to change that? And so what really, I think, the defining factor for him wasn't the fact that my moms were gay. It was the fact that I wasn't harming anybody else. And he knew that there wasn't anything about which to be afraid.
Mm-hmm. You say at the end of the book that you firmly believe, Zach, in 50 years, this country will look back on the fact that in 2012, nearly 30 American states had constitutional amendments banning same-sex marriage. And we will wonder, 50 years from now, what all the confusion was about. How are we going to move to there from here?
It's a slow but steady process. You know, when I talk about this at colleges and universities, I often lean on my own engineering background and point out, look, the road has already been paved. We just have to paint the lines. There's no doubt that today we're all standing on the shoulders of giants when it comes to LGBT rights, and so a lot of the legwork is already being done. I can't overstate the importance of having the presence of people like the aforementioned Ellen DeGeneres and Neil Patrick Harris in pop culture. You know, most people in my generation can't remember a time when they weren't out, don't remember that 1997 Time cover of Ellen saying, "Yep, I'm gay." And that whole thing. And so the reason that's important is because we've known from a very young age that there is nothing to be afraid of. And that is going to make all of the difference in the world. Once, you get a majority of the American population to understand that, there isn't anything to be afraid of. And let's be clear, that's already happened. Gallup actually released polling data earlier this year. 53% of Americans support full equality under the law when it comes to marriage. That's a huge stepping stone. And once we, start moving beyond that, we're going to start seeing some of these states, New York last year and this year, Washington and Maryland, approving marriage, the legislative process, up in Wisconsin, obviously. Domestic partnerships are currently the law, and that constitutional amendment, has some work to be done there. But, social acceptance is going to be the key in moving beyond the homophobia. And I don't mean that in a hateful sense, but literally in the fear sense. Moving beyond that homophobia is going to be what allows us to see these legislative and policy victories.
Let's go to Diane in Madison. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I would like to, comment. Back in 1961, there was a girl in my class, and she was raised by her mother, grandmother, and aunt. No man in the picture. The father had left. The grandfather died. and the aunt's father passed away.
Oh, wow.
So her nuclear family was women. Mm-hmm. And she was taunted by the mm-hmm. boys in our school because she didn't have a father and a mother. Her aunt and her mother did not remarry, chose to remain single, chose to raise her, and this is 50 years later, we're having our class reunion, and she is with a woman. She has a partner, and they're married, and she's happy. She's not of the mindset that a nuclear family has to be a father and a mother. And I think once you accept yourself, you accept others.
Yeah. You know, I think you raise a good point. Look, a family is not a straight, legally married WASP couple with 2.5 kids, a dog, and a white picket fence. A family is a group of people who love each other. Although I did want to circle back on a point you mentioned earlier, you know, that there were no men in the picture. And obviously, I'm not intimately familiar with this situation. However, I think back on my own life, and even though I didn't have any, you know, men living in our own home, there were many men in and around my own life, you know, both at church and the Boy Scouts at school. You know, so this assertion sometimes that kids who have lesbian or gay parents will somehow be without a male or female role model in any capacity. You know, my mom's didn't elope to some all-female compound in Lesbistan or something like that. You know, there were always men in and around in my life, and I think you would have to try very, very hard for that to be anything but the case.
Thanks, Diane, for the call. You're an Eagle Scout. Congratulations.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Why did you do that?
Well, you know, it's a long story. I was in kindergarten one day, and I ran home, you know, going, Mom, I want to join the Cub Scouts. And at the time, you know, I have to remember, this is a long time ago, 1997, and the Boy Scouts continue to this day to have this policy about not allowing, quote, avowed homosexuals into their program. And so my moms knew from the get-go that this was going to be something that they'd have to be careful about. And so the reason I wanted to join was because there had been this awesome, you know, table in the kindergarten room or commons, I suppose, you know, talking about all the camping and all the Pinewood derbies and the space derbies and everything. And so I was in love. I was head over heels with the scouting program from a very young age. And so, you know, my moms were very upfront with the members of the called Cub Scout packs. It's like the younger equivalent of a Boy Scout troop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they were very upfront with the other leaders of the pack, and they had this conversation, and the other leader said, well, you know, I don't think it's going to be a problem. We'll see what happens. And it wasn't a problem. And in fact, just a year and a half later, when they needed another parent volunteer to be what's called a den leader, our pack was growing so quickly, there were no other parent volunteers. And so Jackie, my short mom, volunteered and became a den mother, a leader of the boys who were in my age group, a mama grizzly, if you will. And so she was not only one of the most revered members of the Cub Scout pack, but when we moved down to Iowa, there was actually a couple members in the pack 381, our pack in Wisconsin, that called down to our new pack in Iowa and said, there's going to be some great parent leaders coming down. Make sure you get them involved. And so that was kind of the Cub Scouting experience, and my mom's sexuality simply was never an issue. And then I stayed in the program all the way through Cub Scouts, from Tiger, which is the very bottom of the totem pole, all the way up to Eagle at the top. And that was an incredible journey for me and a very profound learning experience.
Oh, it's quite an accomplishment. A lot of work going into that.
It's very
true. John in Burlington. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for another wonderful show. I'm just calling to thank Zach.
It's John in Burlington. Hi, John.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm just calling. I'm an LGBT activist myself, and I just wanted to thank Zach for using the bully pulpit that the viral video gave him. I really want to thank you for really taking advantage of that, because, you know, throughout the history of the LGBT movement, the protect the children line has really been one of the most insidious but, you know, powerful arguments against equality that our opponents have used over and over again, starting way back with Anita Bryant, you know? Mm-hmm. So Zach, you being out there and, you know, and being such a wonderful positive, articulate voice for the beauty of LGBT families really does make a difference. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you, Jen.
And I wanted to express my sympathy with you. My my last name is Becker, and it rhymes with the derogatory word for the male anatomy, so I can relate to being bullied for that when I was growing up. So hang in there.
Yeah,
John,
thank you, John.
Let me ask you, John, would you agree with what Zach said that we were talking about earlier, that 50 years from now we will have reached an entirely different place on this issue?
Oh, yeah. Generationally, it's a done deal. Generation that Zach and I belong to really, by and large, gets it. They understand that, you know, LGBT people are people just like everyone else that deserve the same rights and protections and benefits of citizenship as everyone else. And, you know, so it's really a positive change, and that people like Zach are being a part of. And, yeah, I would totally agree. It's 50 years from now, our grandkids will look back and wonder what the heck all the fuss was about.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate that. Yeah, you know, and John's exactly right. You know, if you look at the polling data, the fact is that an 18-year-old in Alabama is more likely to support marriage equality than a 65-year-old in Massachusetts, which, in my mind, really kind of tells me everything you need to know about the future of this debate. That being said, it is also extraordinarily important for all of us to remember that even though the trend lines are headed in the right direction, this isn't going to happen on its own. You know, those lines on the road that I mentioned earlier aren't going to paint themselves. So if we're not out there, you know, living our truths, being open and honest about who, you know, we are, who our families are, and having these conversations, it is possible, however unlikely, that we could stagnate. So it's important to make sure that we carry this momentum forward and we keep moving so we can pass the torch to the next generation.
You mentioned that 18-year-old in Alabama. You talk about him in your book. Oh, tell us that story, because that's changing somebody's mind.
Yeah, so this was an anecdote from a young man who was raised in the Deep South. And he wasn't 18 years old. He was probably just a few years older than I am currently. But this was a Facebook message I received. It was one of the first messages, actually, that I was sent during the initial upsurge of this book back in February 2011. And he wrote that he had been raised in the Deep South and raised, in his words, quote, anti-gay. And then after writing that, he apologized for using it as a slur, which I thought was, you know, a great sign. And then he went on to write that he was about to ship out to Afghanistan and that he, you know, had been always very fearful of you know, gay people. He'd always been opposed to gay marriage, and Don't Ask, Don't Tell had just been repealed. So he was very, very scared of the prospect of having to serve with an openly gay man in the military. And he wrote in this message that after watching my video, it had been sent to him by a friend of his, that not only had he changed his mind on the issue of marriage and LGBT people generally, but he'd also had his fears about Don't Ask, Don't Tell being repealed kind of put to rest. And so to hear that from the very beginning was both kind of like, oh my God, this is a powerful story. And I hadn't fully realized its resonance until that point. But that was actually one of the reasons, that story in particular, one of the reasons why I did decide to write the book. And I was approached by a couple literary agents who wanted to represent me during that first week when the video was blowing up. And at first, my reaction was kind of like, are you kidding me? I'm 19 years old. writing a book? Are you serious right now? But, you know, they kind of talked me through it. And when I decided to write the book, a large part of that was understanding that, you know, folks like that young man from the South who did have these anti-LGBT views changed because of that 3-minute talk. You know, if you could have that kind of impact with a 3-minute, you know, 500-word speech, what can you do with a 60,000-word book?
Right. What can you do? What can you do? What will you do, Zach? We'll find
see.
Out. Yeah. We haven't even yet talked about his appearance that caused this great stir on the internet, his speech before the Iowa House Judiciary Committee. We'll get to that in a moment. And to many more of your phone calls. That speech, by the way, is on our Facebook page if by chance you have never seen it. That's at the Kathleen Dunn Show. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Back with you in a moment on the Ideas Network. Zach Wall's our guest. His book is My Two Moms, Lessons of Love, Strength, and What Makes a Family. We go to Marge in Grafton. Hi, Marge.
Hi. I thought it was rather coincidental that our Bible study group yesterday, which happens to be Christian, ended up... Hi.
We're right here, Marge.
Oh.
I don't know if you're listening to the radio, but just listen to us.
I am listening to you.
Oh, okay.
I had started talking to you, but I must have been a little too soon on that.
Oh, no, you're good.
We heard you. Go ahead.
Anyhow, the Bible study group. Bible study group came to discussion on all kinds of things yesterday, and the first thing we knew, we were talking about homosexuals and the acceptance of homosexuals. And because we're a group that's from age 50 to 93, I think that it was it moved a little slowly in the beginning, simply because of the fact that what had brought it up was the fact that all people are God's children.
That's right.
And therefore, not one of us has any right to be deciding anything, sitting in judgment with regard to anybody. And the first thing you knew, everybody was in the discussion, even though they hesitated a little bit in the beginning.
Hmm.
And I think it was the 93-year-old who, when we were talking about the importance of tolerance, not only for ourselves but others, because of the fact that we do a lot of things that are pretty bad that we just don't even want to acknowledge later. And she said, and you know, intolerance can lead to hate.
Zach.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's 100% correct. And this was a sentiment that was expressed in one of my favorite movies when I was a little kid, Star Wars. You know, when Yoda talks about how fear is the path to the dark side, so to speak. Fear can lead to anger to hate, and hate is obviously not something that is something that any of us should aspire to. And I think that once you get to a certain age, it is, you know, you look back on your life and you look back on the own relationships and you've had, the people you've met. And I think we do have this understanding that at the end of the day, we are more alike than we are different. And so even though at times it can sometimes be frustrating or hard to understand why things are the way they are, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, the important part of, you know, being a gay person isn't gay, it's person.
That's a good point. We have yet to talk about your incredible speech in front of the House Judiciary Committee in Iowa, the thing that went viral. When did you make the decision to do that? What kind of conversation did you have around the kitchen table concerning that? And why did you wait till 2 days before the speech to write it, as your mom said?
Yeah.
It's all right. It went off just fine.
Yeah. So, you know, I was only, you know, we only found out about the hearing days before it happened. The Iowa House went into session about halfway through January. They were sworn in after the 2010 elections. But very quickly, the Iowa House Judiciary Committee passed out of committee this House Joint Resolution 6, this constitutional amendment to reverse the Supreme Court decision. And once they did that, that was on a Thursday afternoon, there was so much public interest that they decided to hold this public hearing on HJR 6. And I was, excuse me, invited to speak there by One Iowa, which is the state's largest LGBT advocacy organization. They had recalled this column that I had written my senior year that you quoted at the beginning of the show. And they pulled that out of their file, I guess, and invited me to speak there. And so that was also on that Thursday. Everything happened very, very quickly. But at the time, I was a full-time engineering student. So I actually had a lot of homework to do before I got down to writing the testimony. And, you know, it was an important semester for me. I didn't quite at the time realize how important when I sat down to write that testimony. But, you know, getting my homework done was a top priority as well. So I wrote that testimony on the Saturday following that Thursday, just 2 days later. And then Sunday I went home for dinner and to do my laundry. and, you know, around the dinner table while the laundry's going in the back, you know, we had this conversation. Look, I'm going to be at this hearing on Monday. Just wanted to let everybody know. My moms were, you know, their reaction immediately was very supportive. And Jackie, as I mentioned in the book, was was a little protective, you know, who's going to be there, what's going on. Terry wanted to help me fine-tune it a little bit and everything. And Zebby didn't you know, have a whole lot to say about it. You know, she's kind of used to be to me being the talker of the family. I did speech and debate when I was in high school, so she was, I think, kind of used to me kind of being out there and talking. But I'd never talked about our family in such a public setting, and so to do that was a big step.
Yes.
And you know, one small step, I guess, and then off we went.
And were you flabbergasted at the response? 18 million views, yeah. Zach. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's hard to wrap your mind around. You know, you look at that number, and that's an awful lot of people in this country, and also internationally. You know, the video receives pretty heavy circulation in a lot of Europe, Australia, and even India. YouTube has this really cool feature. You can look at where the hits have been happening, and I thought that was something that was absolutely incredible. And it was a crazy experience. There's really no other way to describe it. Now, thankfully, so this hearing was on a Monday night, and it was on Wednesday, just 2 days later, when the video really blew up. A week, you know, just under a week after I'd been invited to speak at the thing in the first place. And it was on that Wednesday. Thankfully, it was a snow day. There had been like 3 feet of snow the night before. And I woke up in the morning, you know, to see if it was a snow day. It was. I went right back to bed. By 11 or so, I'd been contacted by 3 different TV shows. Perez Hilton had blogged about it on his website. I'd heard from a bunch of my ex-girlfriends and was on my way, I guess, to this journey. By Friday of that week, my family and I had been interviewed live on national television. I'd been approached by the literary agents to write this book. A speaking agency actually out here in the tri-state area had contacted me. And this you know, moment that had began with a simple 3-minute defense of my mom's had become this new trajectory, mm-hmm. Not just for me, but for my entire family.
Yeah, quite something.
It was a crazy week.
Yeah, Hugh in Marshfield. Hi. Hugh,
yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yep.
Okay, great. Yeah. Yeah, and first of all, let me just say this is a very difficult topic for me. It's very difficult for me to kind of speak about, to be completely honest. I have a great deal of respect for Zach, and I guess my comment and sort of a question as well is, you know, for people that like myself that aren't, you know, so comfortable, you know, with the idea of gay marriage, I'm getting the sense that that's understood to be anti-gay. Is that correct? I mean, is that how Zach would view that?
No, he is not at all. You know, something that I talk about when I'm out on the stump in colleges and universities is, and it's hard to say this as somebody who does have LGBT parents, you know, homophobia is not a problem. Homophobia, you know, fear is a natural response to a lot of things. The problem with homophobia and opposition to LGBT rights generally arises when people try to defend that fear. So being uncomfortable with the idea of same-sex marriage isn't something that you need to be ashamed of or something that I'm going to belittle you for. That's not my intention at all. In fact, you know, I think it's very important for people, including people on my side of the argument, to have this level of respect for everybody and to respect the inherent worth and dignity of all people, regardless of your political beliefs. What I would hope would simply be that even though you may be uncomfortable with the idea of my mom's getting married, you would not allow that discomfort to, you know, change how you might vote at the ballot box. We do live in a constitutional republic that, in the First Amendment to our Constitution, codifies explicitly the freedom to religion and the freedom to political expression. And I would hope that, you know, you would agree with me that certainly covers all religions, you know, that don't harm other people. And so even though my moms may not agree with your religious beliefs 110%, that you would be willing to respect those beliefs the same as they're willing to respect yours.
Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, thank you, Hughes.
Here's a Facebook message from Dawn, who writes, I have rarely heard anyone speak so eloquently. Congratulations, Zach. Your parents should be very proud of the young man you have become, and I'll bet they are. They must be just so proud.
Yeah, thank you, Don. No, they definitely are. You know, my mom, Terry, joked once that, you know, we would have been happy with you just continuing to come home once a week for dinner, let alone to have a video defending our family be the number one political video on YouTube of 2011. So they're both, you know, overwhelmingly proud, and it really is, you know, in some respects, it's an opportunity that I would rather not have insofar as I wish there hadn't been a constitutional amendment to speak against in the first place. But as long as, you know, there are some elected officials who insist on making the love and commitment that my moms have for each other a political issue, you can definitely count on people like me being there to defend them.
So right now you're working as an advocate for a while, taking a little break from school, but you'll go back, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, there's just so much momentum and such, it's such an important time right now for this issue that I decided it made sense to take a little bit of time off of school. I withdrew this past fall and am planning on returning full time in 2013.
Good for you. That's where I went to school too, University of Iowa. That's where Ron went.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a good place. Zach, thank you so much for being with us. More power to you. You've been there. You're more than on your way.
Well, thank you very much, Kathleen.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, our great pleasure. Zach Walls, the book is My Two Moms, Lessons of Love, Strength, and What Makes a Family. We thank Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production. You can carry on the conversation on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We do want to tell you there's a political event you may want to attend, and it might be kind of fun. Friday evening, May 4, on the Ideas Network, the four Democratic candidates running for governor will debate each other on issues and also answer citizen questions from around the state. You're smart people, so it's good to have you people in the audience. If you're interested, call this number, 800-253-1158, seating limited, so you need to call early, 800-253-1158, and then the broadcast will be on WPR and Wisconsin Public Television. Thanks for listening, everybody. Great conversations ahead.